Les colloques du Collège de France.
Good morning. It is really, I'm very happy to be here. So thank you, Edith and Claire, for giving me the opportunity. The project I'm presenting today is very much about Xist RNA. So it is an honor to present this just after Neil, who actually discovered Xist. It's also a bit intimidating, but I'll try to do my best to present the work. So I think we can skip a long introduction, and the first thing I'm going to tell you is that in the Hurd lab now in Heidelberg, the model system that we mostly use to study Xin activation is the mouse, and as most of you know, in the mouse, Xin activation does occur in two different ways. And in the field, we are particularly lucky because we can actually get mouse embryonic stem cells from the mouse embryo. And these two X chromosomes are actually active. And then whenever we differentiate them in vitro, we can recapitulate X inactivation as it occurs in the embryo. So for both waves of X inactivation, the major player of the process is the long non-coding RNA Xist. And as we just heard, at the very beginning of X inactivation, Xist is monoallelically upregulated from one allele, and it spreads all over the place and silences almost entirely one of the X chromosomes. So what we also have been knowing for a while in the field is actually that what we thought was going on is that Xist would be the capacity, the ability to initiate X inactivation only during a very narrow time during ESL differentiation. And we actually thought that afterwards, Xist RNA would be largely dispensable for X inactivation. So this is actually something, it's a view that is very much rapidly changing thanks to many studies in which knockouts of Xist were performed. And the project I show you today really builds up on those studies. So what we also know is that although X inactivation is a chromosome-wide phenomenon, there are a few genes that actually represent the exception to the rule, and we call them SKPs, and these are genes that manage to remain active even though they are completely embedded in the heterochromatin of the inactive X chromosome. So SKPs come in different flavors. You can have constitutive SKPs, and we normally refer to those as genes that always resist X inactivation in all contexts and from the beginning of the process and in all individuals. And then we have facultative SKPs, and these are many more, and they do resist the process very variably across individuals or different tissues. So what we know about these genes is that many of them actually do regulate very important processes, including transcription, translation, and chromatin dynamics. We also know that for some of these genes, and especially the constitutive SKPs who did maintain a Y homologue on the Y chromosome, there is a strong evolutionary reason why these genes need to escape X inactivation. In other case, and this is more the case of what we call facultative genes, it is not very clear whether there is a need for these genes to remain active or else whether the fact that they escape X inactivation is the result of a leaky or inefficient silencing at some point. But what we do know, and is becoming more and more studied in the field, is the fact that having these genes that escape do add yet another layer of cellular mosaicism to females, and we do know that this is relevant in several contexts. So, for example, in the case of human, the very large majority of exo embryos are actually lost during development, and very few women that survive with only one X are either a composite of XX and XY, XO cells, or they are affected by Turner syndrome. And what we also know, and is becoming also more and more studied, is the fact that the variation in the expression levels of SKPs between the sexes does play a role in setting up sex differences. And this is not only true in physiological context, but also in the context of sex bias, disease predisposition. So despite the relevance of escape, we don't really know much about how these genes manage to remain active from a completely inactivated X. And this is actually was the major question that I tried to answer in my postdoc in the Hurd lab, where I really had the time to explore several hypotheses that are currently standing in the field. And today I will focus on one of them. And this is the hypothesis we are to try and understand whether xcRNA itself has a direct role in controlling escape, especially in a post-developmental context, so far away from when we thought that xcs would start and would be fundamental to start the process. So to do that, we first set up a system that actually allows us to increase the levels of xcRNA from an inactive X chromosome that is already off. So this is a MPC, neural precursor cell, that we differentiated starting from an ESL line where we can trigger the expression of xcs by adding docs to the media. And then what we do, starting from this inactive X that is already off, we increase the level of xcs over a time course of 21 days. So we first checked that the system works, and we did this by RNA fish, and you can see in the docs that the clouds become more intense and bigger. We also checked this by RNA-seq, and you see that we do reach an induction of xcs that goes between 5 and 10 levels, and a tenfold enrichment, and we were happy to not induce an extremely abundant amount of xcs, but just a bit more to also remain in what is the variability that we can see across different tissues. And then the first thing we did was to check what happens to escapees, and this is how we represent with these heat maps allele RNA-seq data, allele specific. So I will spend a bit of time to explain this because this will come back in my talk. So here I'm representing all X-linked genes, and anything that is gray in this map is a gene that underwent X inactivation and is only expressed from the active X chromosome. And anything that is green inside is an escapee, and those are genes that are expressed from both the active and the inactive X, and you see that in this specific MPC clones, we have a lot of escape. This is variable across different clones. So then, what happened if we induce xcs? So you see this is the control situation, and I'm now zooming in only on green genes that are the escapees, and as soon as we induce xcs, you see progressive silencing across the time course. So this is the first, I mean, with this data, we actually did realize that, yes, increased level of xcRNA in post-XEI cells, in cells that underwent X inactivation, can actually lead to silencing of escapees, which was not necessarily expected. And then we also realized that different genes here do respond to the same amount of xcs in a different way. So some genes get silenced right away after 3 days, some genes never get totally silenced or with different dynamics. So we actually ask whether these would reflect the fact that different categories of escapees would differentially respond to changes in xcs RNA level. So we categorized our genes in facultative and constitutive escapees, as I introduced before. We have a new category here. These are MPC specific. So these genes behave absolutely like facultative escapees. We call them like this because those are genes that we identify for the first time to escape X inactivation in our clones and were reported to be silent in other studies. But they are basically facultative escapees. So now, if you see at how these different categories of genes react to exist overexpression, I hope you can appreciate that in the, you don't see my, yes. So this is the control situation. So all these escapees are active because they escape X inactivation. And if you go down the line up to 14 and 21 days, you see that there is a very big difference in how facultative and MPC specific genes get completely silenced, while constitutive genes always resist complete silencing. So they really are always remaining on the inactive X chromosome, no matter how much xcs you put. So in the second set of experiment, we actually wonder, okay, what we show so far is that xcs can induce silencing of escapees in MPCs that are differentiated cells, but nevertheless, they are still stem cells, they can be differentiated. We found that this thing works also in astrocytes that are not dividing cells. So if we do the same experiment, we see that our escapees still escape in astrocytes, and we can start X inactivation of escapees in non-dividing cells. So I will go a bit faster. And maybe the final thing I'm going to tell you is that after we we show that indeed exist can work in contexts that we didn't necessarily expect to be a context where silencing can start. We then ask whether this is happening by following the same mechanisms that are in place during early development. So for that, we made use of a SPEN dendron line that was previously generated in the lab, and SPEN is an initiation factor, so without SPEN, you don't get axin activation. So we repeated our experiment in the frame of the SPEN dendron, and basically what we show is that if you now induce exist in this SPEN line with SPEN, you have silencing of SKPs, but you do not silence them if SPEN is not there. So now, I went terribly over time, so I don't have time to tell you more. So I will just close on this and maybe show one the structural data yet. So basically what we wanted also to check, because this is a question that is very close to our hearts in the HERD lab, was how the 3D topology of the inactive X would react to changes in the expression level of SKPs. And this is because previous work in the lab actually has shown that the inactive X chromosome is mostly depleted of what we call topologically associating domain, with the exception of facultative SKPs. So now what we did was to zoom in into these regions of facultative SKPs and see what happens if we induce exist upregulation. And this is exactly what we did here. This is the biggest region of SKPs on the inactive X. And you see that by capture IC, here I show you the structure of the active X and on the inactive X chromosome. In this case, they look very much similar, and that's because all genes in this region are actually escaping X inactivation. So now, if you increase exist levels up to 7 days, what happens is that you have dampening of SKPs that from green start to become gray, and you also start to lose structure on the inactive X. And this became extreme at 21 days when you silence completely the entire region and you lose the TAD-like organization of this loci. So this is really telling us that exist, in fact, exist-mediated silencing of SKPs does lead to loss of tight structure. So I have many more data, but no time. So I learned this from Edith to just go. So I will just go to the final slide, which is the most important. Yes, and it's this one. I need to give credit to who did the work. So the experiments I presented today were mostly done by Antonia, Emma, and myself. And the analysis of the data was done by Jasper Panten, who's here, as a result of a very fruitful collaboration between the HERD and the Odom Lab in Heidelberg. And I'm happy to discuss all the data I didn't present later. Thank you.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.